Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by 1,000 miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. Now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good evening, ladies and boys and girls. How you doing? My name is Jamie Jordan, and you may remember me. I used to be on this show called Gaming Uncensored with this friend of mine named Tommy, and he's sitting over there. What's up, dude?
Not much, man. See if we remember how to do this.
I don't know. Like, I'm freaking out.
I know.
It's been so long.
And we're doing a night show, which is always bandwidth sketchy. So if it gets sketchy, that's why.
Yeah, it's we love night shows, which is bad because bandwidth never works.
Yeah.
But the night is my preferred time to do this show.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Because it takes me all day to wake up. So, like, now I'm awake and let's go, and the bandwidth never works.
Yep.
But yeah.
So far, so good. We'll cross our fingers and hope it stays that way.
So, what's on the show this week, sir?
We have a lot to talk about. We got tons of show notes. So, GamingUncensored.com, because we're definitely not getting to them all. But we got big news from Sony, both on kind of next-gen plans for Sony and Sony and Microsoft teaming up for something gaming related, which is pretty fascinating. So those two topics, I imagine, will take a good chunk of our discussion. Sony also did a state of play, and so we'll talk about the one big game from that we care about. Nintendo did a Nintendo Direct that was completely focused on one title, and so we'll talk about that title. And we've got that other kind of just game business news, lots of like games going to TV and movies, which is kind of nuts. Yeah, there's a ton. So we're going to get through as much of it as we can, but go by GamingUncensored.com to see the show notes that we didn't make it to.
And with that being said, I think we should get right into it, because we would normally talk about what we played right here, but let me just put it to you this way. I know you haven't played anything.
Nope.
And I haven't played anything in a month. You know why?
Huh.
Because basketball is stealing all of my time.
Fair enough.
I want to talk about the Warriors later because I want to switch to the inactive list for like 5 minutes and get your take on that deal. But we can do that later, so let's get right into the news.
Let's do it. That sounds great. Before we do, just really quick, Patreon guys, Cabbage, Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavash, Chad, Zeke, Chris, and Brigham. Thank you guys for supporting us even in times where we don't get to a show, and we apologize for that, and we appreciate your support all the more when we're trying to sort out life and everything else. So as always, but especially right now, thank you guys so much for your support. We're going to be more consistent soon, I promise, and we've got E3 coming up, and so tons of content heading your way. Hopefully it'll help make up for that a little bit. So if you'd like to also help support us on Patreon, you can do that. Go by GamingUncensored.com and click the Become a Patron link there near the top of the page. So
and here's the thing, here's what you don't know. If you give us more money now while we suck, then we'll feel guilty about the fact that we suck.
Yep.
And at some point you're gonna get a whole lot of content.
That is true.
So, like, if you want to just give us a whole lot of money, like, right now, so we can feel really, really, really guilty, then you can guarantee you're going to get content.
I like that. Guilt us into giving you more content by giving us more money. I think that's solid logic right there.
That's Jamie Jordan logic, baby. That's how I roll.
That's fantastic. So let's jump into news again, because we have a ton and we want to get through as much of it as possible. Good conversation topics in here. So we're going to start with Sony and their next gen console. Which first, can we just take a second to speculate on whether we think this thing is going to be called the PlayStation 5? They've done four consoles. They've done three consoles where they've kept a naming scheme going on. The first PlayStation, obviously, was just a PlayStation. But then 2, 3, and 4, we've got a pretty good pattern here. I actually am going to make an argument of why they should do PS5. It's a dumb argument, but I think it's valid. Is that you can do such a good logo with the S and the 5 next to each other in the PS5 and have that kind of reflection symmetry thing going on there. Like, it just feels like it's going to be a missed opportunity if they decide at this one to name it something stupid. And I think most console names are fairly bad. I really appreciate Sony just sticking with simplicity and not trying to wow anybody. Like, Switch, I think, worked out. That ended up being a decent console name. But, like, Xbox One is pretty dumb. Wii is still a really awful name, as much as the Wii became a part of popular culture. I really just want PS5. Please just give us PS5.
Okay, let me just give you guys a lead-in on the life with Jamie and Tommy here. The reason he's thinking about the greatness of graphics is because Tommy is a professional student. And he's always learning something. And his kick in the last 6 or 8 months has been graphics. And so that's where his brain is.
That's fair.
This started with the rebrand of our website. And there's been various other examples. So this is Tommy learning the way he has learned for the past 15 years. And it pisses me off because he'll find a way to get another raise out of it at work. And so he learns more crap and he gets richer. And I'm just sitting over here broke because I really don't give a crap. So there's that.
Fair up until the point of getting richer, because the truth is somehow, even when I make more money, we just end up spending more money. Like, you do something crazy like have a baby and then money's just gone at that point. So
right,
yeah, I wish I was getting richer, making more money, not getting richer.
Let me just put it this way. If the kid is the reason that you're broke, I have two nieces, so I know for a fact that it's the reason that you're broke. I will tell you, she is the best reason ever. I just have to mention that.
No, 100%. She's phenomenal. We haven't talked about her on the show in a while because we haven't done a show in a while. But yeah, she's just fantastic. She says daddy all the time now, and it's just like I can't even handle it. Like I'm just like a pool in the middle of the floor at that point. It's just, yeah, it's the best thing in the world. So all that being said, let's talk about the PlayStation 5 or whatever they decide to call the thing. So Sony did this, like, I think it's like an investors event. You can actually go by the show notes. They put the PowerPoint presentation just up publicly so you can see it, which is pretty cool. And they've been really kind of remarkably candid about this next generation console that they're working on. And they've released a lot of information up until now, and in this presentation they talk about it some more. And so we know some details and maybe a few of these things we haven't discussed yet, so we'll go cover a lot of these. By the way, this PowerPoint covers a lot of other stuff too, so if you just want to see what Sony's been telling investors and that kind of stuff. It reminds me very much of what E3 used to be, where they always had the big, like, all the numbers segment in the press conferences. They don't do that anymore, but in the
Sony
early days.
Sony was real good with the numbers that for, like,
they years. All, like, pie charts and everything. Like, there's some good pie charts in this presentation, so you can go check all that out. One of them is brand strength in different countries, and so apparently the PlayStation brand is ranked number 3 in the UK. Who would have known? Number 13 in the US, which was pretty far down the list. Apple, number 1 in all of those places. So brand loyalty for
Apple,
doing pretty good. Yeah, UK, Germany, and the United States are the 3 that it shows here. In the UK, this one was surprising to me, and this actually shows up on all 3 lists ahead of PlayStation, is Lego. So in the UK, this is off topic, but just interesting to me. In the UK, the top 3 like brand loyalty is 1 is Apple, 2 is Lego, and then 3 is PlayStation. 4 is Google, 5 is Netflix, 6 is Fitbit. Cool. 7 is Spotify. 8 is Amazon. 9 is NHS. Way to go, NHS. And then 10 is something so small I can't tell what it is. Android, maybe, it looks like. Who knows? In front of, this is shocking too, just looking at now more of these, in front of the PlayStation for the U.S. brand loyalty are things like KitchenAid and Nike and YouTube and Samsung. Not as surprising, but yeah, random stuff. So
I'm guessing Phil Nike's feeling pretty good about that right
you
now.
You would imagine, not a 10 in consumer strength, apparently brand strength at Sony, PlayStation 13. All that said, that's not what we're talking about. Let's talk about the details about the next gen PlayStation. And so they started off by showing a video. Apparently, I saw this on Twitter and it was awful, and so I didn't include it in the show notes. But it's like somebody recording off their cell phone in the audience pointed at the screen. So it's not great visuals, like you can't see it, but it demonstrates what they're talking about here. And something we've already heard them talk about is that their goal for this thing, something they're really selling already this next-gen console on, is that load times are going to be very, very, very quick and showing a difference between load time on the next-generation console versus the PlayStation 4 Pro and how it's 10 times faster, less than a second to load this new area in Spider-Man, whereas it takes over 8 seconds on the PlayStation Pro to load this new area. It does this little demo where it kind of flies through the world and it goes faster and faster and faster, and you can see how the PlayStation 4 eventually hiccups, you lose frame rate, all that kind of stuff, and the next-gen one, you know, just seamlessly flows through all this stuff, that they're really selling it on this idea that it's going to be instantaneous. This always-on kind of thing that you can just pick it up anytime, you can set it down anytime. It's just ready for you at all times, which we've heard before. This has been a selling point of consoles in the past. It's never fully been realized, and now they're trying to get there. And I get that, and that's cool. I will say on this point, I think game developers have made a lot of strides in kind of hiding load times, maybe, or you know, redistributing the burden of a load time. So I think of specifically Red Dead, which I haven't touched in 2 months, I think, at this point. But Red Dead, whenever you fire it up, takes forever to load. The first load is just painfully slow, like 5 minutes slow. Like, it's, I don't know if it's that bad, but it's pretty close to that bad. It takes forever for that thing to start up. But once I get in the game, it flows really well. Now, I don't fast travel really ever at this point. If you fast travel, then it takes a while to load. But it's pretty seamless once you get into the game. If you're just, you know, running around, doing missions, all that kind of stuff, you don't really run into loads. And so while I get what they're going for, and I appreciate it because I'd love for that initial load time to go away as well, I feel like load times haven't been a huge burden in gaming for a while. And it's weird to me that Sony seems to be focusing on that as a primary benefit of this next-gen console.
Maybe I'm just getting old and more patient, but why do you care about this? Because that initial load time with Red Dead sucks, but the, like you said, the rest of the game is fast enough. Like, we can't even sit in front of it long enough to do what we need to do. Right. Like we need it to load because we keep having to get up and go do something.
Yeah.
So like, I don't like, I'm all about that. That's great. But is there not something else you could be spending your resources on?
Yeah. I mean, and to be fair, this thing at least feels like it's a long ways off. It feels like it's sometime next year. Sony seems to be, all indications are it is 2020 at the earliest. And so maybe this is the thing to talk about at this point, you know, like it's just like, okay, we need something to talk about. And so this is the kind of thing we'll hitch our wagon to until they get to the point that they're really wanting to show off visuals of next gen stuff, which at this point they seem very, very hesitant to do.
You just used the phrase hitch your wagon on the show. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I thought you'd get a kick out. We're talking about Red Dead. Seemed appropriate. So, a few more hints on what kind of Sony's strategy going forward is going to be, too. They have this slide that says SIE believes in generations. And so it says, we will harness the power of new technology to offer completely transformative and immersive gaming experiences, which is a lot of kind of corporate mumbo jumbo, you know, like that's all well and good. Like it sounds good. It's like, we're going to make fun games. Like, okay, gotcha. But this is the next kind of bullet point on this slide is the one that's really interesting. It says, we will leverage backwards compatibility to transition our community to next gen faster and more seamlessly than ever before. And so the details have come out around that. Is that because this is going to be built, this console is going to be built on basically the same architecture that the PlayStation 4 is, that everything PlayStation 4-wise apparently is going to be backwards compatible immediately day one, no like big workarounds or anything like that. Like the backwards compatibility, at least to the most recent generation, is going to be really, really simple. And we've talked about backwards compatibility so much, and I specifically have kind of gone back and forth on the value of backwards compatibility. But this seems really wise to me, especially as someone that owns an early PlayStation 4. Like, I don't have a PS4 Pro. I haven't upgraded to the fancy PS4. Like, that would, for me, be a really good selling point for this new console, especially if it comes out without a ton of software, but they're still heavily supporting the PlayStation 4 catalog, which is what they kind of talk about as well. That, hey, go ahead and pick this thing up because you might not have a lot of PlayStation 5 games, but we're still putting out some killer PlayStation 4 games, The Last of Us 2. Let's say that's a PlayStation 4 game that comes out around the launch of the PlayStation 5. But cool, play it on the PlayStation 5. It's going to look better. You know, like we've got, you know, better textures, better visuals, ray tracing with the PlayStation 5. So sure, it's a PlayStation 4 game, but it's going to play better, feel better, look better on the PlayStation 5. And so, that sounds great. Like, I'm all of a sudden like, oh, backwards compatibility sounds like a really good idea to me again.
Here's why I like this idea, because I have had in my head, because I finally got through the Red Dead backlog, which we can talk about that at some point, but I'm finally caught up, right? And I thought to myself, even though we're still only in chapter 3, I've started thinking to myself, you know what I really want to see? And that's a remake of the original Red Dead.
Yeah.
Like, I want that in this engine, in this world. I want to play Red Dead 2 and then see how the story with John plays out. Because it's been so long, I don't really remember.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm really on this bandwagon of, I think an original Red Dead remake would be awesome.
Yeah.
So if you tell me, here's more power, here's more speed, here's all this stuff, and you get to play this great library that we already got, I'm all about that.
Yeah. And if they release games that are on a disc or downloadable or whatever it is at this point, and that's another point we'll talk about here in just a second, but if you could just go buy like one copy of say The Last of Us 2 or whatever other game it is, and it like works on either console theoretically, like it's a quote unquote PlayStation 4 game, but like that it kind of feels like they're leaning toward this kind of elimination of
upscale,
generations.
Baby, upscale.
Yeah, exactly. That like you can either play it on your PlayStation 4 or you can play it on your PlayStation 5. But you, again, this is me projecting now. This isn't what they've said directly, but this is kind of what they're hinting towards. You only have to buy the game once. Like, you buy the game for your PlayStation console, and then whatever console you have determines what gameplay experience you get with it. Like, I would be all about that idea, you know? And so, a couple more things that we know about this next-gen console. We know it's going to have disk support, and so it's not going to be a diskless system. We'll see what Microsoft does on that front. But we know with Sony that they're going to have a disk drive, there at least initially, for primarily, you would imagine, that backwards compatibility thing. We don't know if PlayStation 5 games or next-gen PlayStation games are going to come on a disc or they're going to be download only. We know
and
it's also going to have a solid
Blu-ray
side drive.
Because they own it. So
sure, you would imagine that's going to be part of it. 8K support is a part of it, which we won't have any native 8K games anytime soon. But 8K Blu-ray, absolutely. We know ray tracing is going to be a part of it. We know the upgraded CPU and GPU that they've talked about before. And all that stuff is kind of what you would expect to happen. But I think, whereas, and we're going to get into this here in just a second too, because this is another big story, but whereas Microsoft seems to be leaning into the cloud component maybe a little bit more, it feels like Sony may be leaning into this idea of a more gradual upgrade cycle. Almost like it reminds me kind of, I think of it in terms of like PC upgrades, you know, like of course you're buying a new console here. It's not like a PC where you can upgrade a component. You can upgrade your video card or you can upgrade your processor. You can upgrade your RAM. This is still a whole new box, a whole new thing, but that it's going to be a transition from the previous gen into the next gen, as opposed to this hard line that we've seen in console changes before, that their goal seems to be that they want to make this a transition for you whenever you're ready to get the more powerful box. But the games that you want to play are going to be there for you for wherever you're at. They talk about the PlayStation 4 remaining. The quote here is it will remain the engine of engagement and profitability for the next 3 years, which insinuates that whatever they're releasing as the PlayStation 5 isn't going to be profitable at first, and that's pretty common. But that they're going to continue to support the PlayStation 4. They want this kind of transition period into this new console that feels like a little bit different than what we've come to expect with generational changes.
What I think is interesting is you can come to us, and some of you probably will, on Facebook and say, this sounds weird, I don't like this. But think about it. This is what Sony has been doing their entire tenure. And I say this because I look on my shelf and I have a PlayStation 2 sitting on my shelf. And we talked about multiple times on this show, everybody and their dog owned a PlayStation 2. I still have mine. You still got yours somewhere. They're like pesos in Mexico. Like, if you don't have one, you're not looking real hard, right? Like, this is what Sony does, and they're all about getting people involved and making the hardware accessible. And I think this is just another step toward that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They go on to talk about their kind of distribution stuff, and they talk about PlayStation Now and what's going on there and that kind of stuff. But that actually transitions us into this next story pretty well, which is a fairly shocking story and could be a pretty massive realignment in the gaming world, at least building towards the next 5 years or so. Sony and Microsoft have agreed to a strategic partnership. And so this is some kind of fluffy language in here of how much this is a done deal for real thing. is kind of up in the air, kind of purposefully left nebulous. But they've come to a memorandum of understanding that they will explore joint development of cloud solutions using Microsoft's Azure world to support their respective game and content streaming services. And so working together to support their gaming services that are very much in competition with each other. And so the idea here, or at least some of the background, it seems, is that Sony on their own doesn't have the infrastructure to do game streaming the way game streaming is going to need to be done. And we know Google's getting into that world. We know Amazon is getting into that world. We know that both of them have massive infrastructure in that world. Microsoft also has massive infrastructure in that world. That is very much the world that Microsoft's been a part of for a long time as well. Sony's obviously been working in this world for quite a while now, but has apparently, at least this understanding seems to hint at, come to the conclusion that they alone aren't going to be able to do this all in-house. To the point that apparently a lot of like Sony PlayStation division staff didn't know this was going to happen. Like, we're blindsided by this agreement. But the kind of maybe the takeaway here is it looks like Sony and Microsoft are going to be working together on cloud development to help compete against Google and Amazon and whatever they're doing with cloud gaming and that
well,
kind of stuff.
Well, okay, look, I don't think this is that shocking because the reason it's happening, and you said it, Amazon Web Services, everything runs on Amazon Web Services.
Yep.
Like Netflix runs on it. All of the major services that you know and use every day, 95% of them run on Amazon Web Services. And my brother has this theory that Jeff Bezos is going to be the first real life Bond villain. Like, he's gonna be the guy with his own island out in the middle of the ocean somewhere, building all kinds of stuff and threatening to blow us all up. Okay? And I think we're getting to the point where Sony and Microsoft looked at each other and they said, we can't use Amazon Web Services. And Amazon Web Services isn't just about streaming. It's an entire toolkit of things that allow you to do all of the stuff that they want to do, but they don't want to use it.
Yeah.
And so that's why we're here.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of validity to that. And let's not pretend like there's not any precedence for this. Remember that the Xbox uses a Blu-ray drive. You know, like there already is this synergy that has to exist between these companies in other ways because they do different things and they have different focuses and like HD DVD and Microsoft's you know, backing of that format died off for lots of reasons. And so they really only had an option of going with Sony's established medium of Blu-ray, and so they did. And so even though the gaming divisions of these two companies are very much in competition with each other, both of these companies are much bigger than their gaming divisions. I think for Sony, the gaming division makes up about a third of their revenue. I'm not sure what it is with Microsoft. But
Microsoft,
there's obviously...
Microsoft didn't even a third. Like,
no, it's less than that, I would almost certainly guess. And so both of these companies are doing lots of other things, and so it makes sense for them to see, you know, places where they can work together. And honestly, like, let's also, on a gaming front, I think it makes a lot of sense in that Sony needs this infrastructure. And it's good for Microsoft to have Sony exclusive content through their, at least, infrastructure in some capacity, as opposed to you know, Google or Amazon or whatever. Because, like, Ubi's obviously on board with Google. What's the service called?
Stadia.
Stadia, thank you. Ubi's, we've seen already, you know, willing to work with Google and through that. And so, like... just having content that's good that uses your platform is important. Like there's something to be said of something that simple. And Microsoft, as we've talked about, while they have some good first party content, they don't have what, at least for us, as kind of what I would consider core hardcore gamers, what Sony has. Sony has that market pretty well tied up, and so. It's good for Microsoft to have some of that content coming through their system in some capacity, and good for Sony to have that infrastructure, and good for them both as the more traditional console makers at this point. I remember when Microsoft got into the console market, and so it's weird to me to think of Microsoft now as one of, like, the old dogs in this race, but, like, they are at this point, and so for them to be kind of in the cloud world on the same side against the new guys of Amazon and Google who are just exploring this world, like, it makes all the sense in the world to me. Even if it's weird, it really does seem to make a lot of sense.
I've got a Star Trek analogy for you. Nice. And you're gonna love this because, you know, you've been a Star Trek guy for a long time. But Google and Google and Amazon. I just blank and Amazon, they're like the Borg. Okay, like they're like the Borg. And what's going on is Sony and Microsoft are like, look, the Borg are coming, we have to band together, we have to do something. And Google and Amazon are going, resistance is futile. But they're trying, like they're doing everything they can do because they see this thing coming. Yeah. And I believe that. Like, I'm not just being funny.
Yeah.
Because as much as we love Amazon and everything that Amazon provides service-wise, Amazon has the potential to really create some serious destruction as far as the way business is done in the world. Like, you and I are two of the major proponents of Amazon's great, we can get whatever we need in like 2 days, and books and music and all this stuff, quick and it's there. They're slowly taking over the world. But if you run a business that's not them, that's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah.
And I think what this provides, if it does nothing else, is provides competition.
Yep. Yeah. I agree with that 100%. And I'm very much an Amazon consumer all the time. Just about at least 3 times a week, we have an Amazon package sitting on our front step, probably more than that. You know, like we order so much stuff through Amazon because it's so freaking convenient. We live in a place where we get 1 day shipping on just about anything. I can get same day shipping on quite a bit of stuff. The Amazon distribution place is 25 minutes away from my house. Like they send people in their cars, you know, like it's not even delivery trucks. And so it's uber convenient for me as a consumer to use their platform, which leads me to use other parts of their platform, streaming services and everything else. But man, they're very much kind of taken over, and some competition there is like you said, a very, very good thing. This is a place where I'm absolutely a capitalist and want to see that competition exist. I think it makes everything better.
Think about this. If they decide to turn Netflix off, they can turn Netflix off. As well as the rest of the world that runs on their service. Yeah. If they don't get the percentage that they want, they can just turn it off. And there's nothing, there's literally nothing anybody could do about it because they have the infrastructure.
Right. Yeah, you go find a new home, but it's going to cost you a lot of money to do that. And again, as Sony has figured out at this point, it at least appears that this is going to cost them a lot of money to go it alone. And so let's make a friend to try to make it a little bit more practical. And again, I think it's a win-win for both companies. And so as weird as it is, it seems to make a lot of sense. Yep. One more bit of Sony news, and then we'll move on to talk about some other stuff. But Sony did a State of Play. Right after our last roundtable, we talked about when are they going to do another State of Play. And then, like, the next day they announced it and did it. And it was quick. It was, like, I think the whole thing was, like, 12 minutes long. Like, it was really, really quick. And I honestly can't tell you much of what happened in it because at the end – they showed a trailer for the Final Fantasy VII remake, and for us, that's all that stuck in my head. you know, like, this is, like, a game from both of our childhoods that we adore, and so, yeah. It looks really, really good, right? Am I wrong in that? Is it just fanboyism, or does the thing look really, really good?
It looks really, really, really good. They're doing some sketchy things with the battle system that I'm not sure about. But yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah, it's really pretty visuals. It just like it both looks like Final Fantasy VII and it looks modern. Because, like, let's be honest, and we've talked about this before, at least for me, Final Fantasy VII is just one of those games that visually doesn't hold up. Like, I can go back and Final Fantasy VI is my all-time favorite game, and I've played it many, many times since the first time I played it many, many, many years ago. Final Fantasy VII, while I have gone back and replayed it, I think all the way through once, I've gone back and picked it up a couple of times, and it's hard because it's an ugly game by today's standard. Like, there's something that's charming about sprite-based RPGs that is not charming about early polygonal whatever mess, you know, early PlayStation visuals. It just doesn't hold up.
I'm gonna tell you what all of it is. You know, you want to know what the difference is?
Huh.
Is that game in particular was not built at all for a flat screen.
Yeah.
You put that on a flat screen, and it don't matter what you do, it ain't going to look good.
Yeah. I never thought about that, but I think that's a good point.
It was built for a CRT with a static resolution, with all of this stuff.
Yep.
And the screens that we have are so much better. I know this because I'm looking at one right now. I'm watching a basketball game while I'm talking to you, which, you know, it's hard for me to do. And I want to go and be in a basketball game just like you and I want to go and be in a ballpark whenever we can. But it is so good now that I have myself parked in front of a screen, and it's almost better than being there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In lots of ways.
I don't want to, like, I would love to be at the game tonight, but there are lots of reasons to not be in Toronto tonight. Like, there are lots of things about that you and I would hate. And so here I sit, and I have Kawhi Leonard and Giannis Antetokounmpo in high def, and it's a wonderful thing.
I appreciated the Antetokounmpo there. That was nice.
You knew I was going to get it. I wasn't going to.
I don't even ever try it.
I wasn't going to attempt that and not nail it, man. I'm a professional, damn it. That's all I'm saying. No, I probably couldn't do it again. But
that was impressive once.
But that's the point, though, is screens are worlds better now than they were.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think there's other components, too, but absolutely, yeah. So all that said, let's just really briefly, because you mentioned the battle system, I tweeted about the battle system. So from the trailer, it was very obviously a live-action battle system that's very much like the newer Final Fantasy games. They've gone that direction for the last few kind of main single-player iterations of Final Fantasy. And I just... because we grew up playing Final Fantasy even before Final Fantasy VII, but Final Fantasy VII being that kind of key RPG of our youth, but playing all these other turn-based RPGs as well that weren't Final Fantasy, but these JRPGs of the time that were turn-based in different ways, and you could get creative with that turn-based thing. But I just, like, Final Fantasy to me is turn-based combat. And so that was a turnoff to me about this trailer. Everything else about it looks great. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to play it as quickly as the thing comes out. It's still going to be episodic, and we can talk about that more here in just a second. But it's going to be a game that we obviously are going to jump on top of. But there is going to be something to me that feels missing if there's not an option in game to have a turn-based combat system. And I would rather play it that way for the nostalgia purposes, because that's what I think of Final Fantasy really being. But I'm perfectly fine with you having the more real-time action-based combat system. Just please give me a turn-based option as well that I can go into a menu and switch on and play it like Final Fantasy VII feels like it should be played.
And Square, this is coming from a legit, like, for sure crippled guy over here, this thing that I'm about to say. I need every Final Fantasy game out there to have some sort of turn-based component. That was what was great for me about 7 and why I put 150, 60, 80, 200. I don't even know, because the clock stopped. That's why I put that many hours in that game, because I wasn't limited in what I could do.
Yeah.
And for this game especially, turn-based is required, and the new stuff is cute, and I'm glad it's there. And for those that want it, like, I got into this debate about Fallout 4. I put a grand total of 10 hours into Fallout 4. You want to know why? Because the battle system is not what I need it to be.
Yep.
That's it. And so, please, 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 we are in 2019, and by the time this thing comes out, it's going to be 2021, if not later. Please give me multiple options for a battle system.
Yeah, 100% agree. And part of what you're selling this off, a huge part of, like, let me not minimize that, a massive component of what you're selling this off of is nostalgia. You're selling Final Fantasy VII to guys like us who played it originally when we were in high school. And so, yeah, please give that. I've probably told this story on the show before, but two of my closest friends when I was a freshman in high school, that's how clearly I remember Final Fantasy VII. Two of my closest friends in high school, when I was a freshman in high school, weren't friends with each other. I was friends with each of them individually. We've talked about both of them on the show, Nathan and Mike, who were two of my best friends growing up. They became friends with each other because Nathan owned Final Fantasy VII, and I wanted to play with all three of them, all three of us together. Like, that was what was the thing that, like, codified their friendship with each other, was that Nathan owned Final Fantasy VII, and so we hung out at each other's houses to play Final Fantasy VII, and like that was it was such a big part of my youth and gaming and everything else. Like it is so ingrained to me in me as this nostalgic thing that I want to relive it as close to the original as possible with making it look really, really pretty. Like that's what I want. I want an experience that plays so similar, not identical. You can upgrade a lot of mechanisms that are going to make it more streamlined, but really similar. I want the same feel of that original game with really, really pretty visuals. The more you stray from what that original game is, the more I'm going to be disappointed by it.
And we realize that we sound like old guys. We are. Yes. That's it. We are. And that's why I haven't spent a lot of time with Fallout 4. Because it ain't New Vegas. That's why I'm looking forward to Outer Worlds. Because Outer Worlds looks like it's going to be New Vegas.
Yeah.
I just doing things the way that feels good. In this context, you have to do.
Yeah. Let me mention the fact that this is still being set up, sold as being an episodic title as well, that they're going to release it in these multiple episodes. I still don't love it. Like, I don't get it. I don't know why that's that's the approach that they're taking with this. However, it does, going back to the very first story we talked about with the PlayStation 5, it does kind of lean into this idea of what they're doing with the PlayStation 5, assuming that the first episode of this happens before the PlayStation 5 is released, which we don't know. Maybe we'll get more details around E3. Sony did announce that they're doing their, I don't remember what they call it, their same kind of E3 adjacent programming that they've done, that they did last year. They're doing that again, just sans showing up to E3. So they're going to be making announcements and all that stuff around E3 like we fully anticipated they would be doing. They mentioned that at the State of Play. Maybe we'll get details about release dates and all that kind of stuff around E3 for this. But assuming that the first episode at least comes out before the PlayStation 5 is released, when does the last episode come out? If the last episode comes out after the PlayStation 5 is released, that's obviously going to make this one of those transitional titles that's going to kind of bridge that space between the PlayStation 4 and the PlayStation 5. And so it feels like it works into this idea that they're already selling and kind of this being one of their flagship transition titles. I'd put The Last of Us 2 is probably going to be one of those flagship transition titles as well. To instead of making it a quote-unquote launch title for the PlayStation 5, it's going to be compatible with both. And if you play it on the PlayStation 5, you're probably going to get better visuals. You're going to get better performance, load times, all that stuff that they're talking about. But it'll still work on your PlayStation 4 as well. And so, I don't know. It fits into that narrative we're seeing them build.
And I think the reason it scares us is because we've only really seen one company do the episodic thing, and that is Telltale Games. They're the ones that really introduced us to that, and they yeah. know how to do that. If this was them, I wouldn't worry about it, but it's not. It's Square. Yeah. And Square either does things really, really well or horrendously badly.
Yeah. All that being said, Hitman, is Hitman a Square title?
Either it is a Square title or they are the publisher.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to remember.
I don't know.
So it's published by iOS, and so... I've just pulled up Hitman on Steam. Hitman did the episodic thing outside of Telltale. The newest Hitman was published by Warner Brothers, actually. So whatever. But all that to say is there is other instances of episodic apparently being done well. I haven't played Hitman in years. I never really got big into the Hitman franchise. But it appeared to be a good game that they executed that episodic thing. But this is an RPG, and it feels weird to do like an RPG like this episodically, which worries me in that they're going to have to compromise some of the, like, Final Fantasy VII is a big open world. Like, doing a big open world episodically, like, that seems counterintuitive to me, right? Like, obviously, if you're doing this episodically, there's places that you can't go. And of course, in Final Fantasy VII, like, the world opens up as you progress, and so you can do that. But you get to a point in Final Fantasy VII where you can essentially go wherever you want in the world.
Yeah,
you can go
that...
on all these little side quests and all that kind of stuff. I don't know how you do that episodically.
Yeah, but when you get to that point, it's only like 10 or 15 hours before the end of the game. If
sure.
that, it might have been later than that. You didn't get it that long.
But even then, do you wait until the last episode? And then the last episode opens up the whole world, and so the potential content that you get in that last episode is massive compared to the first four, how many, you know, assuming they do five episodes, because that's what Telltale does, and so everybody obviously does that. But, like, it just, like, that feels weird. Like, that's not how I feel like an RPG works. And so that makes me fear that it's going to be a little bit more linear, which they've kind of done, like Final Fantasy 13 was more linear in that way. And I'm just, like, the more recent Final Fantasy games, I haven't played Final Fantasy 15 enough to really speak into it. I played 13 a lot, and it was fine, but I didn't love it, you know? And so, like, I worry that they're trying to squeeze Final Fantasy 7 into this box of what modern Final Fantasy is. And the reason I love Final Fantasy 7 so much, in part, is because it's not what modern Final Fantasy is. Like, I love the old-school approach to Final Fantasy. They certainly weren't episodic, and so... I don't know. That to me is maybe my big, even more than the battle system, that's my biggest fear of why I'm going to be disappointed by this.
I feel like if they're smart, and Sony is, because this game was their first massive, massive, massive transcendent
yes
thing, I feel like that even though it is episodic, I think we're going to get a version of this game at the end where it's like, okay, give us more money. We're going to give you the whole massive thing in one lump with all of this extra stuff that you can do. Old school, just like you remember. I feel like that's coming at the end where
yeah.
they say, okay, you like this, you liked it in the episodic version. Here is the collector's edition with all of the DLC, with all the stuff, with everything open. Here it is. Give us $50 more and we will.
You may be right on that. But as somebody who wants to play this thing as soon as it comes out, that would be disappointing as well. You know, like, to not have it opened up like that from day one. Yeah, I don't know. We're just going to have to see how they pull it off. Maybe they do something to make me a believer. But that's the thing that I'm most worried about. Quickly, because we're four stories into this massive show notes and we have less than 10 minutes left. I'm going to just run through a couple of things really fast. I mentioned this, and so I'll go ahead and bring it up really briefly. Nintendo did a Nintendo Direct just focus on Super Mario Maker 2, which looks great. And announced a few things about it that I think are worth mentioning. One is that it has a story mode, which I'm actually really excited about because we've mentioned before, you and I are not the people that like creating levels. But the story mode is like Mario having to go through like essentially the evolution of Mario games of like all the different kind of
Little Big Planet Mario, baby!
Yeah,
give me that!
it sounds super cool. And again, tapping into this nostalgia thing we're just talking about with Final Fantasy VII, obviously Mario's peak nostalgia. And so that's fantastic. Please, yes, give us more of that. Nintendo also announced their E3 plans, which is basically the same as what their E3 plans are going to do. Nintendo Direct on the 11th, which is the first technical day of E3, do that morning Nintendo Direct. That's going to be software focused. They've said this over and over. And so will we hear news, whatever, of new hardware around E3? Possibly. They're at least alluding to the fact that they're not going to put it in this Nintendo Direct, which is kind of their biggest, newsiest thing. They're also going to have a world championship for Splatoon 2. They're going to have a world championship for Super Smash Brothers. And they're going to do all their Nintendo Treehouse Live stuff. And so what you've come to expect from Nintendo over the past few E3s is exactly what you're going to get from Nintendo in the next coming E3. What we'll get from Sony, we have no clue what that'll look like, but Microsoft and Nintendo at least look like what we've come to expect. I mentioned this also, and so briefly, we'll have a little discussion here. A senator, specifically Josh Hawley from Missouri, has announced a bill that would ban loot boxes and, quote, pay-to-win microtransactions in games played by minors, which is basically every game. Like, you could say a mature rated game isn't theoretically played by minors, but obviously it is. So no loot boxes, no pay to win microtransactions in anything that minors play. That seems absurd, right? Like, we're not fans of pay to win, and we're not fans of loot boxes, but I don't need the government getting involved here.
What's this guy's name again?
Josh Hawley. To the point, this is where we're old, that we have a senator that's named Josh, which just feels like not the name that a senator should have. Like, we have a Supreme Court justice now named Brett. Like, I went to school with guys named Brett. Like, that seems like a ridiculous name to be. Whatever. Josh Hawley.
Okay, so here I go. Josh, you're a United States senator, and this horse is so far out of the barn, like, gets across the field, it is, like, completely gone. You're going to have to get a four-wheeler, because you ain't catching it. Let's just act like this didn't happen and move along, because this is being dumbest idea I've ever heard. Josh, I have no idea who you are. I've never met you, but just put your head down and act like you didn't propose this. Yeah. Please.
Yes. Fair. He's 39, by the way. That's in the story.
Okay. All right. Let me just say this. I have contemplated in the last couple of years running for office. And you and I both know I would be the worst politician ever. Because I'm basically Trump light. Like, I can't really keep my mouth shut. You know, I would be horrible.
Yeah.
But the reason that I thought about it is because my insurance situation is such a huge pain in the butt. Like, I'm not going to get into that here, but I am limited because of my insurance situation. And obviously, much like your wife, we gotta have insurance.
Yep.
Right? Like, that's the thing. And so I thought about this, and to think that there's a dude named Josh that is in the United States Senate, and he's a year younger than me, kind of makes me want to throw up.
Yeah.
Like, I just really want to throw up. So, Josh, if you hear this, I have no idea who you are. I've never met you. I'm sure you're a really, really nice guy. But you need to put me in charge with whoever got you that seat, because I need that job.
Yep.
Thank you.
Fair enough. Really quick, I want to bring this up. Moving on, because I don't have any way to follow that up. That was fantastic. I want to bring this up, and this is something we probably should have more time to talk about, but just because it sounds to be great. There's a rumor that apparently is circulating on 4chan, not a place I'm interested in going, and so this is off of a different website that's citing a 4chan rumor that's supposedly not even true. But I just love the idea of it so much that I wanted to mention it on here. And it's about the next Assassin's Creed. And, of course, the question around Assassin's Creed is, when will the next one take place? Like, what era are they going to do? This rumor, of which there are lots of details that we won't go into because they're probably all fake, but the rumor of the era is good enough that I want to mention it, is that it's Viking-based. And I think a Viking-based Assassin's Creed would be phenomenally cool.
First, that's the coolest idea I've ever heard. Second, it has the biggest potential of any game I've ever thought of to completely fail. So if this is true and you're gonna do this, listen to me, Ubisoft. Are you listening? It cannot suck. If you're going to do this, it has to be good. Because yeah. I want some Viking.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. And yes, I made it a verb. It's now a verb. I want to Viking.
That's great. What, like, honestly, like Assassin's Creed Pirates didn't get me all that excited, but some reason Assassin's Creed Vikings sounds super cool. Like, what's the difference between pirates and Vikings that the Vikings makes me so much more excited?
Dude, it's all about the helmets and the beards.
Yeah, that's the beard is the thing, right?
Like, that's it. It's helmets and beards.
Yeah, for me, it's all about the beard. Pirates don't have beards. I guess Blackbeard is the most famous pirate, so pirates have beards too. But something about Viking beards are just cool. So, World Video Game Hall of Fame, we've talked about this the last several years. New inductees have been announced for 2019. The class of 2019 includes Colossal Cave Adventure, which is a text-based game that I really don't know much about. Microsoft Solitaire, which I do know quite a bit about. I've played a fair share of Microsoft Solitaire. Mortal Kombat and Super Mario Kart, which both seem like strong additions to the Video Game Hall of Fame. And we're deep enough into this thing now. I think it's been going for like 5 years now or whatever. Like, to the point that Mortal Kombat and Super Mario Kart make sense. Obviously, those aren't first ballot Hall of Famers, so to speak. But at this point, like, yeah, I could get why those are ones. And both of those still relevant franchises, Mortal Kombat having a new game that just came out, Mario Kart having new iterations very regularly.
And they're both really good. So
both really good.
Yeah.
And Solitaire, obviously, probably the game that has wasted more corporate time than any other game in history.
Dude, where's my Minesweeper at?
I know. That's what I was thinking, too. Like, Minesweeper was always my preference. I love me some Minesweeper, so... Yeah. Speaking of Mortal Kombat, just really quickly, there's a new Mortal Kombat movie coming. They're rebooting the movie side of Mortal Kombat, which kind of boggles my mind.
Is you both still alive?
You would think, right? Like, I think he is.
I think you got to get that guy for Mortal Kombat.
Absolutely. Yeah, let me. I'm looking up U-Bowl on Wikipedia. So I kid you not. This is what Wikipedia says. U-Bowl is a German restaurateur and a former filmmaker. Apparently, he's in restaurants now.
okay. So maybe not get you bowl.
Yeah.
But man, it's a really good idea. Somebody should call that guy.
Somebody should. His picture on Wikipedia is great. It's him wearing a shirt that says game with the Atari logo as the A in it. So, it's beautiful. So anyway, okay. New Mortal Kombat movie coming.
Now that we're down to the last like 2 minutes, I think I can say this without it blowing up in my face. This has been a really good show. You know why? Because this is what you get late at night when we're both awake. This is what happens. So I if we ever get to the point where we can do this show full time, which I desperately want to do, I vote for like 80% night shows.
I like it.
Yeah, I like it.
I'm all for that. Swing by the show notes. There's other games as movie/TV show news. Sony creating their own division to make film and TV shows off of games, and Netflix making games off of their original TV shows. Apparently, Netflix is going to be at E3 and is announcing more than just Stranger Things. We know Stranger Things, a game, is coming, but apparently they're also making some more of their original content into video games, which I'm interested to see what
Daredevil, please.
Yeah, wouldn't that be freaking cool? Or Punisher? Or, yeah. But go by the show notes, gamingoncensored.com, because there's tons of other stuff there we didn't get to, including releases, of which there's nothing super big, except for Rage 2, which has come out since last we did a show. And it's getting kind of mixed reviews, not a 73 right now on Metacritic is what I'm looking at. So it may be fun. Wait for it to come on Steam sale for super cheap and pick it up at that point. So, yeah, show notes, gamingoncensored.com.
And like, we should wrap right here. If we were being professionals, we would wrap right here. But I can't do it because we're two sports geeks. And so if you're still listening, you're going to have to listen to the next 5 minutes because I have to get your thoughts. And I know this is not really your glass of tea, as it were. But I have to get your thoughts on the Golden State Warriors and what has happened right now. And I want to say that I called this because when Kevin Durant went down, I sent my brother a text. I can prove it. And I said, this is the best thing that has happened to the Golden State Warriors this year.
Yeah.
And his response was, why? And I said, because the ball is about to move.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've been paying attention, but them boys are real good.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, they look like, not moderately better, like a ton better without Kevin Durant, who's inarguably one of the best players in the league.
I'm not going to say they're better. I'm going to say it's different.
It is different.
And when
but they haven't lost a game since he went out, have they?
No, they have not. They have won 6 games in a row.
Yeah, and 2 last ones against Houston and then swept. And, yeah, like.
And there's a stat that PTI keeps trotting out. I'll be interested to watch the show tonight to see if they trot it out. But I think they are now 31-1 with Kevin Durant out when Steph Curry plays.
Yeah.
That is nuts.
All the rumors of, like, Kevin Durant going to the Knicks or whatever, like, God bless him. Like, the Warriors aren't going to be significantly worse.
I'm going to tell you what's going to happen because I have a theory.
Here's the prediction.
I don't think he's going anywhere. Not after this, because we've been having this debate, and there's 2 reasons I don't think he's going anywhere. One, it doesn't matter where he goes. They still have to beat those guys.
Yep.
And unless Steph Curry is dead, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yep.
And two, Kevin Durant, and I love the guy. I think he's amazing. I love to watch him play. But he now has something to prove. And three, the Warriors can give him the most money next year.
Yep.
So I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he was until about 3 weeks ago, and all of that has gone out the window.
Yeah. If the Knicks had won the draft lottery, you think that would be different?
Probably. I mean, yeah. for crying out loud, that kid is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, what happens to Anthony Davis now? Does he, like, Anthony Davis and Zion in New Orleans is
pretty... I think he's got to stay. How do you not stay?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, he's got that. That's going to be ridiculous.
Yeah.
If they do it right, they will be able to play with the Warriors.
Maybe. I don't know. It's crazy. But the Warriors are it at this point. Like,
please,
the Warriors and everybody else.
Please tell me you've been watching a little bit.
A little bit. Not a ton, but a little bit. It's to the point now, and I've said this about the NBA a lot. Like, the NBA, for reasons that are just that, like, it's not my primary sport, like, doesn't interest me until it gets very close to the finals, because the playoffs go so long for the NBA. Here's the point where it gets fun for me, and so I'm getting more and more into it. While at the same time, like, I will freely admit, I'm watching baseball just about every night, and this is the point of the baseball season that matters so little. I just love baseball. You know, like, baseball is my sport the same way that basketball is your sport. And so,
see, like, I love baseball too, and so I'm flipping back and forth.
Sure.
But
baseball at this point, like, doesn't matter. You know, like, there's 160 freaking two games in a season for baseball. Like, whether or not your team wins tonight is pretty inconsequential in the overall thing, which is the same thing with the NBA for me in a lot of ways. Until you get to the point that the games start really mattering. And to me, this is the point when the NBA, obviously, where they start really mattering. And so, yeah, it's getting fun right now to see what's going to happen here at the end.
Couple of things that I'm going to say about Steph Curry and the Warriors that I never thought I would hear myself say. I don't know where they rank, but after this last six games, I'm starting to get that 90s Bulls feel.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it feels like. And you know I lived through that. I watched... Yeah. That entire thing, that's what this feels like.
Yeah.
And Steph Curry, even though it's a completely different game, Steph Curry is killing people like Jordan.
Yeah.
I mean, he's averaging 37. 37.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun to watch. And I don't know if you've noticed, but I have been louder on Twitter because I figured out that I can chirp at these guys. And one thing that I know about Steph Curry, one thing that I've learned about Steph Curry, because he's everywhere in the news, that dude pays attention to his Twitter.
Yep.
I don't know if you saw that story about the little girl that wrote him a letter because they didn't have Curry Fives for girls.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was not aware of that. After I saw that, I was like, dude's paying attention.
Yep.
So I've been tweeting at Steph Curry for like a week and a half. And so if you see me on Twitter... talking about random stuff, it's because I figured out that people actually pay attention to it.
Fair.
So now I'm having a good time on Twitter. I don't know about you, but it's fun.
It is fun. It is. It's a different world that I don't have enough time for, as is everything else. But it is fun. So
we totally lost our entire audience there. And I just had to do it because we don't get to talk about sports that often.
Yep.
Which, by the way, before we get off sports, I have to say your Astros are looking pretty good.
Yeah, they're not bad, aren't they? Yeah, I'm happy. coasting so far. Lost George Springer, lost Jose Altuve, and still cruising. So, yeah, I'm feeling good as an Astros fan.
Hello, World Series! Yeah.
By the way, George Springer, freaking fantastic baseball player. Just absurd. I won't get into that more, but like, of all the great players that the Astros have, George Springer being the dude that's like carrying it this year, it's great. I love the guy. So
Really got to bring the inactive voice back. I'm just saying. Like, it's got to happen. I don't know when, I don't know how, but it's got to happen.
We'll do it someday.
All of that being said, you know how to get a hold of us. We got the Facebook, we got the Twitter, we got the Gmail, gaminginsister@gmail.com, or the voicemail line at
509-GAME-210. I'll mention we do have a couple of segments that are sitting there, including Brigham on a motorcycle. We're going to get to them, I promise. Our inconsistency has left us with this massive amount of news each week. And so we will get to the couple of segments that are sitting there, but it's literally just two, I believe. Send us more so we don't run out.
And this will not, like, I'm not going to tell you this is not going to happen again, but I will say we have to do it more often because in this hour and a half that we have spent, I've gotten happy. And I haven't been happy in like 3 months. And so, it will happen more.
Totally.
Because I'm in a good mood. Yes. And that's a good thing. So, with that being said, I think that's about it. Is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
All right, I'm Jamie, that's Sabi, and for maybe not a month, we'll be back, and we're out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gaminguncensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.